Bitcoin just ripped 25% in a week.
The more the US government intervenes in the treasury market this way, the more likely we are to see large jumps in Bitcoin's dollar price.
But what we're talking about is safety.
This guy is full of shit. No one should be listening to him, and no one should be supporting any company like his.
When the US president talks about military operations as a means of stabilizing the dollar, your fiat wealth is probably at risk. Bitcoin just ripped 25% in a week. New data from Strike shows the 10 best trading days in each year account for 162% of Bitcoin's returns. Miss those 10 days and you miss the entire move. So are you holding actual Bitcoin when the volatility hits or still waiting for the perfect entry? Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I have Tony and Katie here with me. Be sure to smash that like button, subscribe to the channel, and stick around for our Bitcoiner of the week. Alrighty, Tony, 25% in 7 days. People trading or shorting or playing games are in shambles. What do you say to all of this?
Well, that's the lesson you have to learn until you finally learn the one that matters, that Bitcoin is money and not a trade, and or an investment or a stock or any worthless thing that you believe belongs in the legacy system. Bitcoin is money that you earn, save, spend, and just live on. And as long as you adopt this, this mentality, you will always be on the winning side of best trade the world has ever known. Trying to time the tops and the bottoms, trying to apply Mickey Mouse algorithms to try to, I don't know what they're trying to do. 99% of people end up with way less Bitcoin than they started with. So the best formula to win, in the future of money is to simply have more of it. Don't worry about the narratives. Don't worry about the stocks. Don't worry about the news. Don't worry about anything of that sort. Bitcoin doesn't live in this world. It has its own rules without rulers. And as long as you believe and understand that, you're always going to be on the upside.
Absolutely. Katie, we're going to talk in a minute here about what might be propelling this. We talked about a little bit last week. What's your take? What's your advice to anyone listening and seeing this this dollar denominated price action that we usually ignore, by the way?
Yeah, this is a textbook example of why trying to time the market is a trap for the vast majority of people. So, unless you have premium access to Trump's Truth Social, then you're unlikely to be able to predict what markets might do and when the Bitcoin price might spike or fall sharply. And this chart by Strike illustrates nicely that with something that is so volatile when measured in government coupons, aka dollars, that most of the growth is going to occur within a tiny window. So the short version is keep dollar cost averaging into Bitcoin on a regular basis, and then you can forget all about the price action. And over the long term, if you DCA in, you won't have any reason to suffer from FOMO or to panic sell. It's the KISS principle, keep it simple, stupid.
I think that's good advice. And I was actually going to say, we've got all these tropes that we talk about in Bitcoin. It's not your keys, not your coin, be your own bank. I think one of the most important that people forget about is truly stay humble, stack sats. The staying humble means not trying to time the market, thinking that you're smarter than the next guy or that the person with the right chart's going to push you in the right direction. Just stack Bitcoin, put it in self-custody, cold storage, do it the right way, and then you don't have to worry about any of this stuff. And by the way, click the link below. You can schedule a time with our team. We'd love to talk you through how we can help you take self-custody, proper 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. You learn so much. I was a client before working with the team. Strongly encourage everyone at least chat with us because it's the most important financial decision you'll ever make. Alrighty, guys, up next, speaking of some of what might be causing and driving this this price movement, historic intervention coming. This is from the Kobayashi letter. Despite several announcements by the U.S. Treasury about imminent intervention, yields still won't fall. This includes doubling buybacks to $4 billion per operation in the Treasury, now considering using its $950 billion, almost $1 trillion Treasury General account for these purchases, but since supposedly saying they will do whatever it takes. Katie, why don't you explain your thoughts on what's happening here and what we might expect to see?
So yeah, we touched on this story briefly last week, and there have been more developments in the US debt shenanigans since then. So, there's quite a lot to unpack here. I'll try to keep it as brief as I can. So a week ago, the US Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, announced that the Treasury would double bond buybacks to $4 billion. And the purpose of this intervention was to bring bond yields down after the 30-year yield hit the highest level since 2007 and the financial crisis era. So this worked for about, you know, a day or so before the yields began creeping back up. So now they are hinting at bringing out the big guns and using up to almost $1 trillion from the Treasury general account to expand bond buybacks. And, you know, Trump has also hinted that he won't rule out military intervention to save the bond market. But exactly how that would work, no one really knows, since war normally has the opposite effect on bond yields. So what is the problem with the 30-year yield creeping up like this? Well, it's a massive issue for the entire market because the 30-year yield dictates long-term borrowing costs, which affects things like mortgage rates and corporate bonds and basically any other long-duration debt. And on top of that, the biggest borrower, of course, is the US government themselves. And while a percentage point increase in yield might not sound like very much at all, the federal debt burden is so massive that it equals an extra $3.5 trillion, I think, over a 10-year period. So you can see how this all just kind of turns into this inescapable debt spiral. But, you know, what does this have to do with Bitcoin's price? Well, when bond yields fall, or the markets believe they're going to fall, they get their money out of bonds and into so-called higher risk assets, such as Bitcoin, because now they're safe investment doesn't look quite so safe. And the Bitcoin market cap is so tiny in comparison that even small rotations out of bonds and into Bitcoin are going to have a tremendous effect on the dollar price. So in a nutshell, the more the US government intervenes in the treasury market this way, the more likely we are to see large jumps in Bitcoin's dollar price.
Tony, desperate times. So it looks like they're willing to risk and do anything. I think we've been anticipating this for quite some time. What's your thought on all this?
Well, I'll start off by saying that the reason, you know, the Bitcoin fiat price went up is because where else are people going to go when they understand that what they thought was safe is deteriorating and collapsing at an insanely rapid pace? No one wants to hold the dollar, at least not with the same terms and conditions that, you know, they were accustomed to before. They understand it's extremely risky and they are either reducing their positions, you know, considerably or just, you know, staying away from it entirely. And so what does that tell you is that if, you know, if the US government wants to keep extending, you know, the lifeline of a dead product, well, they're going to have to do every unimaginable thing, you know, out there in order to maybe, hopefully, try to extend its lifeline by a little bit longer. I personally don't think it's going to work because you can't. Like once the thing blows up and it's been blown up for a very long time, you can't fix this. I mean, you're way past $40 trillion in debt. Your interest rate is over $1 trillion. Like, who in their right mind is going to want to sink with this ship? And these are just, you know, like the side effects, the ripple effects of that deterioration and collapse. So expect a lot more of this. And fortunately, we have an escape hatch. I mean, Bitcoin was created specifically to protect against this because, you know, under a Bitcoin standard, none of this is possible in the first place. And so, you know, these extreme bad news events force people to start paying attention to what, you know, Bitcoiners have been trying to tell you for the last 17 years. It's very sad that, you know, it often requires a very painful prerequisite. But here we are, man, human nature. If that's what it takes, that's what we'll see.
Yeah, I think when the Secretary of the Treasury starts talking about emergency operations, the U.S. president talks about military operations as means of stabilizing the dollar, where your fiat wealth is probably at risk. Maybe it's time to pay attention. Got some Bitcoin. All righty, guys. Up next, we've got 1984. Wish we could make this fiction again. Palantir just released a new surveillance system that fuses satellites, radars, and every camera into one real-time tracker of people in movement. We have to consider, by the way, that we're going to talk about this in a moment. We have to consider the possibility or probability that with Flocka's eyes, a system like this could be overlaid onto the U.S. and we could all be targets. You guys are lucky that you don't live in the U.S. right now, apparently, but I suppose this is probably coming everywhere. So get ready. Tony, how do you handle news like this?
And if this doesn't look like an assimilation from like an evil alien race, I don't know what else to call it. But this is what they want, man. I mean, this is, you know, part of the desperate attempts to remain in power is by weaponizing everything at their disposal against, you know, the helpless citizens. And at the end of the day, if the citizens don't do anything, that's exactly what's going to happen. You're going to end up, you know, caged in something you've never seen before. And living conditions and the rules, essentially, are going to be, you know, absolutely horrific. This doesn't have to end this way, but it does require action from the citizens who are just seemingly watching this happen and just complaining about it. Complaining does nothing. It's a waste of time and energy and breath. You want action. There's, you know, power and volume. And so you can put an end to this, but you just need enough people to stand up and take the first step. And I believe, you know, the others will follow because, again, the writing's on the wall. Central bank digital currencies and a world of massive surveillance and control is what this legacy system desperately wants. And they are putting up the rails to build specifically that. Bitcoin, privacy, all of that is the antidote to this horrific movie. But you have got to opt into it and opt out of the other one. It's not going to happen on its own.
Absolutely. I would add one thing to your list. So you got Bitcoin and self-custody. You've got protecting your privacy digitally, privacy phones, all the things that we talk about a lot because it's something we help our clients do every day. And plan B. I think if this is something that you just want to avoid and completely opt out of, there are better places you can go. Again, I'm going to direct everyone to the link below where you can schedule some time with our team, learn about all of those services that we offer. We're training sovereign individuals, so it's not just Bitcoin and self-custody. That's just the first move that I think everyone needs to make. Katie, what's your reaction to Palantir? And by the way, Katie, where you are, is this something that you hear about, see, or is this just like, I see it in the United States all the time, but is this something you're experiencing?
Yeah. First of all, I think these Palantir and Flock stories, although on the surface they're unrelated, I think they're just kind of two sides of the same coin. And we're sort of looking at future scenarios here. I mean, we take a step back and consider that Palantir's business model is to test and refine their surveillance products in military and intelligence environments, or in other words, test them against the foreign enemy, and then package them for the domestic market. So there are already well-known cases of this, such as the LAPD and New Orleans police operating Palantir systems for so-called counter-terrorism measures, or as they said, to ward off future crimes. So Palantir's Maven system is an AI platform that pulls together and overlays data from like multiple different sources, like satellite, drone, communications. And this part I found really interesting, even publicly available data like social media monitoring. And if that wasn't Orwellian enough, then they have the baby-faced CEO of Flock telling us that while he values his privacy, you are going to have to give up yours in the name of safety. And actually, in answer to your question, Michael, I had never heard of Flock until a couple of months ago. So for those who are also not aware right now, Flock sells subscriptions to their surveillance services in the US, which includes things like vehicle plate reading, gunshot detection, and facial detection. And the interesting part is it's not limited to policing, and it can actually be used by private individuals or groups. In my view, there's no real avoidance of systems like this, at least in the US, where these systems are mainly deployed right now, you know, unless you plan to go and live in the Alaskan wilderness or something. So the good news is that there are still many places in the world that simply do not have these sophisticated domestic surveillance systems. I mean, in our Portuguese village, the only form of surveillance is the local granny network. And, you know, you can also look into, like you just mentioned before, Michael, you can look into a Plan B residency in Panama because they are not surveilling their residents with anything like the intensity that the US is.
Let's watch that clip real quick because the Flock CEO came out and it just made a fool of himself. To anyone who's paying attention, this is insane. Let's watch this.
I value my privacy. My family values their privacy. My employees value their privacy.
But what we're talking about is safety as well. And so I think when people talk about just one of these, privacy or safety, they're prioritizing the wrong thing. And what we have to prioritize as a country is compromise. How do we have our safety and how do we balance privacy? And so when I think about legislation that calls for an outright ban, that's like banning vehicles. That would never have made sense. Instead, what we did is we introduced laws against drunk driving. We introduced laws around seatbelts, laws around airbags.
All righty. What an asshole. So this is a Flock CEO. And basically, I guess he's never heard this quote from Benjamin Franklin, that those who would give up essential liberty in order to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. That's what I always think about when I hear these people talking about this. Obviously, he has a financial interest in expanding the surveillance state. But Tony, any final comments on this before we move along?
These are the dangerous people that need to be dealt with, because they are, you know, misleading the masses in order to sell a service. None of what he said makes sense, first of all. It's like complete stupidity. Comparing this to vehicles and seatbelts, since when did a car or a seatbelt, you know, invade your privacy and log your 24/7 activities and force you into, you know, a behavioral shift? This guy is full of shit, man. No one should be listening to him, and no one should be supporting any company like his that are deploying these offensive attacks on people's civil liberties and privacies. These people should be dismantled 100%.
Absolutely. And I mentioned we have some services to help you protect your privacy online, set up privacy phones. We unfortunately can't help you hide from Flock cameras, but Home Depot sells a great number of hand tools that might help you to eliminate that threat as well, just for what it's worth. All righty, moving on. Andy Burnham says, we will send mansion tax police, this is a new one, to homes to decide whether the owner should pay thousands of pounds more under the new levy, the Telegraph discloses. So HRMC valuation agents will be able to demand entry to properties to assess whether they're worth more than $2 million and therefore liable for the levy. So they're taxing your assets that you can't move, that you can't hide from the authorities based on their arbitrary property valuations. Katie, this is somewhat close to home for you. What's your take?
So the UK's Labour government has done what they seem to do best and found yet another way to extract taxes from people, and this time through a so-called mansion tax, but they like to call it a high-value council tax surcharge, which sounds so much nicer. This means that anybody whose property is valued at over £2 million will be liable for an extra annual tax of up to £7,500. And this is estimated to affect about 150,000 homes in the UK, but most of which are concentrated in the Greater London area, unsurprisingly. So what's going on here? The UK seems determined to drive out anyone who has any sort of wealth. And frankly, having a property that is valued at £2 million in London doesn't exactly put you amongst the wealthy elite anyway. They want to send tax assessors into your home to try to figure out if it's worth more than $2 million so they can slap you with the tax. And of course, they say this affects only a tiny minority, which is the favorite refrain for the creep of government intervention. But I think this is a slippery slope, because what right does the government have to send their agents into your home without a court-issued warrant simply because you happen to own a home whose value has increased beyond an arbitrary number? It's just utterly absurd.
It is utterly absurd. And I would add, too, that the problem with the way that people have structured their lives is that their assets are held. I mean, it's fiat, but things like real estate, which have historically in fiat terms kept pace with inflation, outperformed inflation in many cases over many time periods, you can't move it. There is not a damn thing you can do when you lock yourself into a £2 million mansion in the UK or a $5 million home in the United States or wherever. The minute the government decides that's the threshold, you're screwed. And at the same time, you might want to get out of it. Well, now the demand for that has plummeted because people don't want, you know, to buy a £2 million home. To me, this is like in the West, this is the exact use case of Bitcoin. You can own it. They don't even, they can't prove that you own it, that you still have the keys, and you can leave with it if you want. That £2 million home is not going anywhere, and you're going to have to let them in at some point. They'll get, if you refuse, they're going to kick down the door eventually and make sure that you pay your taxes. Tony, what's your take on this, man?
And this thing makes me smile and, you know, go back to what I've been saying for a very long time. The notion of government that we've been fed is the farthest thing from what we actually have. And the more we read stories like this, the more, you know, a lot more people are going to finally understand this. There is no government. What you have is a criminal organization of thieves and thugs who are now desperate because they are failing and are being slowly obsoleted. So they're going to resort to every imaginable tactic to find, you know, reason to steal from you. They've labeled it, you know, these fancy words, but that's essentially extortion. They're going to send a bunch of thieves and thugs into your home. And if you don't pay, God help you. And if you think this is going to like stay with $2 million homes, you're crazy. This is coming to every home, every level of income, because that's the only way these parasites know how to fund themselves. And so again, if the people don't stand up and push back and resist, you will be assimilated. And this is not specific to the UK. We've seen absurd rules like this show up in other countries, like in Australia, where there's been talk of a view tax or an extra bedroom tax. These are all creative ways, similar ways to just essentially the common denominator is that they want to steal your money. Back in Lebanon, I remember many years ago, where a bunch of guys came up to my dad, fully armed, and they asked to borrow his property. That's the mansion tax, a polite way of asking that if you don't leave, we're going to carry you out. So this is how it starts, but the ending is always the same. So two options. You either push back and fight properly or you leave. Most people are probably, you know, better suited to leave. And if that's the case, come talk to us. There are jurisdictions out there that are not going to put you through this horrific nightmare day in and day out. And so don't feel that you're stuck, but you have got to do something. You either stay and fight or you leave. Doing nothing, you will lose by default.
Absolutely. Click that link below if you want to do something about it. We're on under our last story now. Be sure you smash that like button. Be sure you subscribe to the channel. And now for our Bitcoiner of the week, Zach XBT. So he introduces us to Millions. So this is Rich Millie 666, a French cyber criminal allegedly laundering assets from two violent home invasion robberies in France in April of this year that netted two-thirds of $1 million, with a history of openly posting about bank and retail fraud on social media. Zach says that his work has led to $93,000 worth of Tether frozen directly tied to these attacks so far. This is a bold criminal posting all of these online. Katie, I did not get a chance to dig deep into this or like fish around as to what this guy's been up to exactly, but any additional insight you have on what's happened here?
So Zach XBT is a pseudonymous blockchain investigator, and he was recently able to trace almost $700,000 worth of Bitcoin funds that was stolen in two violent home invasion cases in France. And I believe the perpetrator is, or one of the perpetrators is this guy that is flaunting his ill-gotten gains all over social media. That doesn't seem very smart to me. It seems like a great way to get caught. Anyway, Zach's investigations led to Tether freezing almost $100,000 tied to the case. And just as an aside, this to me kind of brings home the realities of the dangers that Bitcoiners can face when you have agencies like the French tax authorities leaking or even worse, selling your personal data to criminals. So all of this seems kind of abstract until you see this asshole dancing around on social media with his stolen funds while his victims were terrorized. And the best tool that we have after the fact of a crime like this is blockchain forensics. And Zach XBT has harnessed his knowledge of this to assist people who have been victims of these awful crimes. So not all heroes wear capes. Some of them sit behind a computer and study the movement of crypto across blockchains.
Yeah, hats off to Zach XBT. I mean, major props for the work that he does. And by the way, this is like one story of many that he has helped with, doing some incredible work. The other thing that obviously stands out to me about the story as a company focused on self-custody is they were able to freeze the tether. So Tony, I don't know if you want to get into that or if you want to talk more about Zach, but I always see that when tether's frozen, I'm like, yep, that's the CBDC that's waiting to happen here. But what's your thought on Zach and everything he's doing?
Yeah, man, you stole the words right out of my mouth. As far as Zach is concerned, this guy is a full-out hero in my eyes. I mean, I wish I could meet him one day, shake his hand. This guy has contributed so many benefits to people who could have been, you know, victims, but, you know, at the end of the day, had their funds restored to them. But you know, the other side to this story is that the way Zach is able to perform all of these helpful tasks is because the money is not truly decentralized. And so there's still a way to freeze it. And if that's the case, that could be weaponized against innocent people, not only by crazy criminals like this guy, but, you know, by nation states, by bad actors, by anyone really who has enough power and influence to turn off a switch on you. So kudos to all the good work he's doing. But at the same time, you know, just be aware that the reason he's able to do this good work is because the money is under the control of a centralized group of people. And that is not what I would recommend people put their life savings in, which is why, again, Bitcoin was created as the antidote to this problem.
Absolutely. Self-custody is the revolution. I think that's a good place to wrap up, guys. Again, click that link below if you want to learn about how to protect your online privacy, secure your Bitcoin, and proper self-custody. You want a plan B, any of those things we can help with. Make sure you smash that like button, have subscribed to the channel. Tony, Katie, it's always a pleasure talking with you both. We will be back next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers.